you know, the way to get things done was to, you know, find experts and hire them. So they weren't, if they didn't have the real estate background, they hired somebody, or maybe they partnered with somebody who had the real estate experience. I've been a property manager for 30 years and I'm kind of tired of it. I don't really want to do it the rest of my life. I don't want to be at 90 and saying I'm still a property manager. And, you know, we just wanted to do something different. So,
hey guys, welcome. Jim Manning here with the Passive Wealth Show. What this show is designed to do is to help people build passive wealth investing in real estate so that one day they can replace their income. Our team here has generated 100% passive income on over $250 million invested with us over the last 15 years. So I'm here to share some of the lessons that I've learned along the way to pay it forward for all the help that I've received over the years. So onward and upward, my friends, here's the true passive wealth. Let's get going on the show. All right. Hey guys, Jim Manning here with another Passive Wealth Show episode. And today we have Todd Van Meter on the line here. He comes from us from Blue Hat Wealth Business and Financial Consulting. And Todd and I were connected through a mutual friend, and we were able to talk a lot about some tax savings and just different real estate investments that we've done over the years. And I got to tell you, since we had that call, Todd, I've been really excited to have you on the show and click this record button and see where this thing goes. So thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate you and welcome.
Well, Jim, thank you very much. I do appreciate it. And it's good to be here. Hope we can share some tidbits that are beneficial to anyone who listens to this. After our last call, I too was pretty excited. It's always fun when you come across other investors who are like-minded and who are willing to be open-minded and consider various strategies, because it's through those discussions and comparing strategies where we often get these little glimmers of things, and they can make a huge difference in the outcome of our business.
Oh, that's absolutely right. So, Todd, why don't you give just a quick little background of like your professional career and then just some of the real estate that you've done, and let's get the conversation going.
Sounds good. I appreciate you asking. I'll try to give you as concise a background as I can, because there's a lot to it. I've been full-time in real estate for 40 years now. I literally started when I was 19, 20 years old, full-time in real estate. Put myself through college working in real estate. My degree happened to be, my major was real estate in college, and I got my minor in finance. So it's pretty much been in my blood my whole life. So I've been in various aspects of real estate. I've been a property manager for 35 years, probably over 35 years now since the last time I counted. But I'm also a licensed home builder. Most of the properties that we managed were houses that we did build. We did have some fix and flips. We did do some renovation and remodeling. We did a little bit of development. We did a little bit of redevelopment in mobile homes, single family homes, and some small multifamilies. So I have a very broad, diverse background, and can happy to talk about any of those and some of the best avenues to create wealth, which is where I think is the focus of a lot of people. How can I generate more wealth for my family?
So I love this, guys. On this call right now, we have 60 years of real estate investing experience. It's not often I meet somebody that makes me feel like I haven't been doing this very long. But man, you got me doubled still. I'm getting close to 20 years. You being at 40 years, my goodness, Todd. But yeah, so this is going to be exciting. So we were talking about some tax sheltering and strategies like that you've gravitated towards. But before we get into that, it's a really important topic because, you know, if you sell something and you owe 20 or 30% on taxes at the end of the day, if you can hold on to that as much as possible, that's a really big deal, whether it's a business or some properties. And that's been a key focus of you and what Blue Hat Wealth is doing. But let's get into like why this became such a focus of yours and, you know, like what the story is behind that before we get into some of those strategies that you like to do.
Oh, absolutely. Love to get into it. As a 40-year real estate investor, I've been a member of quite a few real estate investing groups. I run one in my town that I've been running for 33 years now. I run another one that I've been a member of for 32 years, and I have now been running it for the last couple years. I've been in some other groups for the last 10 or 15 years. I've been in another group that has only been around for 2 years. So at these meetings with hundreds and hundreds of investors that I've met, one of the most often talked about subjects is, okay, so now I'm a real estate investor. I've been doing this 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever it is, but here I am with this portfolio of properties, whether it's five properties or 50 properties. And what now? What's enough? And where do I go from here? Because I'm busy and I'm wearing all these different hats. And some days I feel like I'm a fireman putting out a fire. And some days I'm a policeman escorting people out of a house. And, some days I'm just literally running numbers and saying, should I buy this next deal or not? And so it often runs the question, and what often is talked about is, what do I do now? Because I've got this portfolio and I'm not sure what to do at this point because I want to add more properties, but I'm so busy, I may not have time to add more properties. So it's just a topic that came up a number of times. And for my wife and I, after she's worked with me in the business about 35 of those 40 years, and we hit a point about 5 years ago where we were walking on the beach one day and she literally looked at me. She says, I just want to let you know I've been thinking a lot and I'm hitting a point in our life. Our kids are grown. They've moved out. They're starting to have kids of their own. I've been a property manager for 30 years for her and I'm kind of tired of it. I don't really want to do it the rest of my life. I don't want to be at 90 and saying I'm still a property manager. I don't want to be at 70 and saying I'm still a property manager after already doing it for 30 years at 55. So, we were had that discussion, and I said, well, it's funny because you say that because I've been studying some strategies on ways we could transition our portfolio. We were up to 84 properties that we owned at that point, and it was a lot. We were doing it all between the two of us. We were the business. We did anything that needed to be done. We did it between the two of us. Yeah, we hired a few subs, a heat and air man, a painter here and there, and stuff like that. But we did most of the day-to-day. And after 30 plus years of doing that, it wasn't challenging anymore. We had good systems in place. We had good cash flow. We were building good wealth. All the positives were there, but we weren't learning. We weren't being challenged. And if you aren't learning, as somebody once said, I don't remember who it was, it might have been Jim Rohn, if you aren't learning, you're dying. So we didn't feel like we were learning anymore, and we just kind of felt stagnant. So we would start looking for strategies and ways we could transition out of those 84 properties into something else, but yet not get hit by the taxes.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, we talk a ton about that on the passive investing side and how many people get into active investing and what they really wanted to be was a passive investor and how how do you differentiate between what's right for you and how important that is. So then you started, I believe you started kind of investing. So you sold some of the properties and then you've invested in different real estate funds and kind of more passive opportunities now is like a core focus for your personal investments, right?
Yes. And then the last 5 years, we've shifted from actively owning most properties to now we're mostly invested in other deals, syndications and stuff, different funds, and in different types of assets as well. So we've gotten more diversification, but it's all in passive investments that once we send the check off and invest in it, we're pretty much done. There's a day-to-day managers, on-site managers, asset managers, a whole team of people who are overseeing those investments and handling all those tasks that my wife and I used to handle. So it gives us now a lot more time freedom, but also a lot more flexibility in what we do and when we do it and where we invest and how we invest.
And I mean, really the key with that, guys, is if you have capital, that is a value add to a business partnership. And you can use that value add and invest in such passive ways. And we have a couple of real estate funds on our end too that we operate with. There's over 130 partners that we're making it passive for those partners. But all partnerships, you have to have a win-win. You have to have a value add. So for if Todd or myself, when we were just starting out, that active investing was a great route for us, an opportunity, right? Because maybe we didn't have the capital that we do now, and so it was a way for us to do things. So you have the passive investments going on. What do you have any? Okay, well, we're going to get into the tax stuff here. One more question before we do. When you vet opportunities on the passive side of things, like what are you looking for? And what are some tips and tricks on some of the successful investments that you've had? that made it such a good opportunity for you and your wife to invest in?
The normal stuff we would go over, I like to have one-on-one conversations with the person who's in charge. I like to talk to the actual, the top person in the business who's actually running and hiring the people underneath of them if I can. I can start with investor relations if they have an investor relations person, but I also want a follow-up call to make sure that what the investor relations person told me, backs up and checks out and stuff like that. But on the call, I want to know their story. I want to hear where they've been, how they got there. It doesn't necessarily, I've invested in several funds where they didn't have real estate experience. They had, investment banking experience, or they had management experience in, various corporate America type jobs and stuff like that. But they had experience and they had know-how and they knew, the way to get things done was to, find the experts and hire them. So they weren't, if they didn't have the real estate background, they hired somebody, or maybe they partnered with somebody who had the real estate experience. And because things come up in real estate that are unique to real estate, like evictions and those types of things, tenant squabbles and stuff, you may not hear about those things in corporate America, but they're every day, or hopefully not every day, but they're certainly a reality when you actively own properties that these things happen and they come up. So, you need a depth of knowledge from somewhere to be able to tap to say what's the best way to handle these things and what should our company strategy be if somebody's late? Do we file eviction? Do we give them another 2 weeks? You gotta set those strategies so you know how to proceed with your business.
So that's interesting. So really what I hear you saying and Jim's words are, hey, the track record of success. And it doesn't even have to be in the same on the same industry, but I want to see someone that has that experience and whatever they previously did, they had some success in, and then that can translate. And they're wise enough to know, like, well, if I do have a gap in my experience, I'm going to get the right partner who brings that experience to the table.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a great summary of it. And even further, even if they have some things that weren't so successful, that can be very valuable too. I've had guys where we've invested with them or women who, whoever it was we're talking to, that, maybe, one question I tend to ask is, what was, if you've been in 10 investments, what was your worst experience? What was your worst investment out of those 10 and how bad was it? And then you follow up with, so what did you do when it was underperforming? How did you handle the adversity? Because oftentimes, how someone handles the adversity is more telling and more knowledge, more valuable to them and to you as an investor if they've already had adversity. When I started investing in passive investments in 2020, most of the people I was talking to had never been running a company through a downtime, a down market, or a recession. I've been through four recessions with three different businesses. We came out of every one of those recessions stronger than we went into it because we had more opportunity during the recession with slower sales, slower volume. We had more opportunity to look inward and make adjustments and to tweak some things. Like, for example, in 2009, when everything was so slow, we completely redid all of our insurance on our properties and our liability coverages because we had the time to actually have the conversation with our agents. And it gave us better insurance coverage at a lower price. So we came out of that recession with better insurance and saving money over we went into the recession with. So, experience is great, but sometimes the adversity part is where you learn even more. And during challenging times, if you can come out of that challenging time with more information or, a stronger business, it's just going to benefit you in every year thereafter.
That's right. I mean, every market there's money to be had. There's a honey hole. There's opportunities, and I found that to be true, especially in real estate. And I think a lot of people that have only seen one market will operate out of fear. And I'll hear them say, "Oh, well, if it goes down, what do I do?" Todd, I don't have the four cycles, but I did start studying real estate in 06. I started investing in 07 when the market was still going down. So it was, in many ways, it was a blessing because I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't know what a good market was, or quote unquote, I didn't know better that what I was doing was incredibly difficult, and that there were other markets that were a little easier to make money. And and that beginner's mindset, man, it has carried over. And it's there is a confidence that our team operates out of, because we know, well, we know how to shift if the market shifts. We know that we're going to be able to make money regardless of where it's going. Just we might have to change our strategy a little bit to match that.
Right. And that goes kind of with transitioning. I mentioned transitioning earlier. Most investors and most business owners will transition at some point. Not all of them will, but most will, because even the guy that's got the shoe repair business on the corner or the barber on the corner, at some point, if he's going to be in business for 40 years, some point he's going to say, you know what? I think I need a better location. My business isn't as good as it used to be. The neighborhood's not as good as it used to be. Maybe I need to move over there where the new Kroger or the new public shopping center is, even though the rent's higher, because I'll be busier and I'll make more money in the long run. Or maybe I can increase the price of my haircuts or increase the price of my shoe repair business, just as, a good simple business, as an example. So when you look to transition for real estate investors, some of those ways you might transition is most investors start with one asset class, like single family houses, and most investors quickly transition into several types of assets because that's what's available. They found a deal on a single family, they got it bought. The next opportunity they come across might be a mini storage, or it might be a mobile home, or it might be some other asset type, and they buy it because that's what's available at the time. And go down the road 5 or 10 years, they might be in 5 or 10 different asset classes. Another way is they might be in several different locations. Maybe the first house was on the west side of town, the second one was on the east side of town, the next one was north of town, the next one was in the next town over, and they get 5 years into the business and they're in different asset classes. Maybe they might also be in different locations. And then when they're sitting there looking, say, how come I don't have more time? I've only got five properties. Well, it's because they got five different businesses because they have five different assets and they're in five different locations. And that takes a lot of extra time running back and forth, because maybe the heat and air guy that will work on the west side won't go to the east side. So you got to have two different heat and air guys, or maybe three. And so it just creates more time. So that's another way you can transition is maybe you pull it back in and say, okay, I own X and that's doing the best for me. I like it the best. I like that asset class the best. It's making me the most money. Maybe you should sell off some of the other things and transition more and just to focus and get down to one asset type or one location. An example of that is when we had our 84 properties, we strategically planned it from day one, because when I was in college and I was working for other property managers and other builders, as their employee going out to do work for them, I would someday spend as much time in my truck driving from job site to job site as I would at the house or the apartment complex, actually fixing things that needed to be fixed. I learned that location really mattered, because my time was, they were paying me for driving my more time for driving my truck than they were for actually working on the properties. And so we strategically planned our business when we had 84 properties. Our house we lived in was in the center of the circle. And I, in a maximum of 20 minutes, even at rush hour, I could be at any one of our properties if there was an emergency. Just 20 minutes, I could be any one of them. In one afternoon, in 2 hours, like after a bad storm or something, I can make a drive-by to all 84 properties in 2 to 3 hours, just by driving in a circle and going around town and seeing all of them. So that was a strategic planning on our part, because of something I learned when I was 20 years old about how much time it wastes being in your truck. So those are just some different ways to transition.
Yeah, success leaves a lot of clues to it. And, focus is one of the most important things that we can do as an investor, as entrepreneurs. Like for example, we just yesterday, we had a very emotional moment in our business's history. And we sold after 11 years our original office that we got. And we originally thought, well, we'll get tenants in there. It's a nice, phenomenal location downtown, one of the nicest cities here in St. Louis. And then we sort of started thinking about that. We were like, well, hey, we're really good at lending money on real estate deals. We're fantastic at doing lease purchase deals. And this is a commercial office building. It doesn't fit like within the core competency of what we're really good at. And so we decided to sell it. And, it, long term, I maybe will leave some money on the table because of it. But by having that focus of, we're gonna the opportunity of our time and the opportunity of our focus, yeah, that specific investment we're not maximizing, but we're gonna get that back through the core focus and continuing to develop our core competency, right? And I love that. That's such an important insight, and it's easier said than done, guys. And in my case, like it took 30, oh my gosh, I'm saying 30. I don't think it was 30, but I mean, any you just Google types of single family investments, I've probably done it. We've done wholesales, new construct, new builds, you can name it. And it took a lot of doing and trying things out until we stumbled upon what we are just designed to do really well as an organization, right? So, okay, so
And
let's
that's
talk
a, that
about.
is a great example. That's a great example. What was I saying about transitioning? Because you're exactly right. Your core competency is not commercial real estate, and that's not where your focus is. So I commend you on making that decision because I know it wasn't easy. I've sold, I literally call my real estate, my houses, my babies. I always refer to them as my babies. These are my babies. I developed this house. I built this house. I've been running it. When we sold them, started selling some of those houses, we had owned them for 26 years. From the day they were brand new and had their first tenant to 26 years later. So they were like your kids. You knew everything about them. You had a history there and stuff. And it's not easy to do to let go of something that has been good for you and you had those kind of experiences at. But also you mentioned two great outcomes, your time and your focus and stuff that you have more of if you don't have a commercial building anymore. But also there's the financial, because that money, that equity that you had in that commercial building can now go into the other businesses where you do want to focus your time and enhance them even more.
That's right. Okay. So Todd, you're doing some amazing stuff in the tax savings. So we talk about selling some assets. Let's go back to your story on what you and your wife decided to do, and why don't we start this conversation up with the story of what you did, and then we can talk about different options and things like that too that people have. But yeah, like so you had these, you said it was 84 properties, right? All within 20 minute radius. And you were tired of being a landlord, so you decided it's time to sell some of them off after 30 years. How dare you get so tired after 30 years of doing something, by the way. But yeah, so let's go forward on the story, man.
Just to reinforce, landlording is a great business. Owning real estate is a great business. It's a great way to generate income that comes in while you sleep, but it's also a great way to generate wealth. And it also throws off a lot of tax benefits through depreciation that are great benefits. So it's a great business, but it doesn't, as your life changes, as you go from different chapters in your life, from just starting out with two nickels in your pocket and that's it. You need every dime of income you can get. And as you go through having kids and the kids going to college and paying for college during 2008 to 2016, which was the recessionary times when our kids were in college, you get different chapters in your life and you have different needs and different wants in those chapters. So my wife and I were at the different going into a different chapter with our kids being done with college and getting married. And we just wanted to do something different. So everybody's heard of different tax strategies that are out there. Like probably the most common talked about one is a 1031 exchange, where you can sell a rental house and go exchange it and buy other rental income producing property, maybe exchange one door for two doors or one door for four doors or something like that if you have a lot of equity. And that's a good way to ramp up and increase. But we were looking to do the opposite. We wanted to go from 84 properties down to single digits and not to expand. We didn't want to exchange 84 properties and come away with 168 properties or 200 properties. We were wanting to simplify our business. So 1031 exchange does not work for that unless you go into really expensive properties. You could go, 1031 three properties into one, but you still have the management.
Yeah, you're
And that's
still
what we're trying to get away from.
that's right. That's right, Todd. It does not, if you're tired of being a landlord and you want something more passive, that doesn't solve the tired landlord problem. Like you're just trading an asset for an asset. to save on taxes, really. I mean, it, so, and then the next step becomes, oh, well, if you sell it, okay, I'll just take the tax hit at that point. But not Todd. Todd was smarter than that. He decided to do a little research. Okay, so,
And
so
maybe it's
you,
my experience level. Maybe it's being in the business at that point, 35 years, and seeing the ways numerous other people did it. But you're right, the tired landlord syndrome, I call it, is very rampant. Even landlords who have only been doing it 5 years often start to feel tired if they don't have the right properties or if they don't have the right tenants, and they're getting lots of calls and lots of issues they have to deal with. Or
That's
maybe it
right.
was an older property to begin with and the plumbing's going bad or something like that. And they like the business, and it's a good business, is for the income and the wealth generation, but it is a people business, and the people is what tends to wear you out over time. So we look for different ways to do that. And another way is we could have hired another property man. We talked to a dozen different property management companies about possibly taking over and being the manager. But the problem is they would all do it differently than we did it. And we had systems in place that we had crafted over 35 years that worked flawlessly. And we had great tenants. Some of them had been with us as long as 24 years running the same house. And we didn't want them to transition to a new system with our name still on it and our name still on, as the owners of the property type thing. So we started doing research. I'm mostly me. I did a lot of research online and going to a lot of webinars and a lot of conferences done by CPAs and tax attorneys, and started learning that there are some other ways that you can defer taxes, not just with a 1031 exchange. And one that's not talked about very often is doing an installment sale to a trust. And installment sales are talked about a lot, whereas I might sell you a rental house and I own or finance it to you and take back, I become the bank and you make me the payments on the house over time. That defers the taxes because I only have to pay the tax as you pay me the principal back over the
That's
next 30
right.
years or so.
Yeah, it's a
So
fantastic
this,
way to do it.
it's a great way to do it, but with 84 properties, I didn't want have to deal with 84 borrowers and 84 notes that I now had to keep track of. And have to take some of those back if somebody, spent the money on something else and wasn't making their payments. That mean I'd have to foreclose on them and stuff like that. So I decided if I was going to do, I'd just rather keep owning them and renting them as opposed to doing that. So what we did was a hybrid of that, where we did an installment sale, but we did it to a trust. And then the trust gave us a promissory note back. So the trust owes us the money. So all the properties that we've sold so far have all been sold to one trust. And we only have that one trust to look to get our payments. Then once the trust owned the properties, the trust went out and sold them off to cash buyers who came in with their own money and their own mortgages and bought all the properties from the trust. So the trust got all of the income from the sales, the proceeds, and it all went into the trust bank account. So now the trust has all the proceeds from the houses, and we have a promissory note that the trust owes us all that money, all the proceeds money back to us, and is paying us interest. And then the trust can go and take that money and invest it. And the trust has chosen to invest that money passively in real estate syndications and real estate funds because those funds and being in real estate still gives you all the same benefits of owning it yourself, tax-wise, growth-wise, asset appreciation-wise, income-wise. All those benefits are still there for the trust without having to do day-to-day active management.
Okay, so Todd, so here's the deal. I'm 110% tracking you. I'm concerned though that I'm tracking you because I've been doing this for 20 years. So why don't we let's go back to the installment sale, and why don't we break down, let's take the complexity of having the trust out of it. Okay. Why don't we go into just if I do if I own or finance a deal, let's do a deal together kind of verbally here. So you own a $200,000 house, and I come to you and I say, hey, I want to buy it. But you want to avoid capital gains, right? Why don't you finance me on this? And, because you bought for 50,000 30 years ago or whatever the heck you bought the thing for. So, instead of paying capital gains on $150,000, let's do this owner finance deal. Okay.
Okay.
So break this down, Todd.
Okay. So to start with, there can be a down payment, but there doesn't have to be a down payment. That's between the parties. As a seller, I have sold many properties on an installment sale to my former tenants with no down payment required because they didn't have one to put down. Or sometimes maybe they had $2,000 to put down on a $200,000 house, which is a 1% down payment. No bank is going to do that for them. But because they were in the house, because they've been my tenant for several years, maybe you had rented from me, so I'm willing to sell it to you for the $200,000 and with no down payment. That means you're going to issue me a note and sign the note saying you owe me $200,000 and it's going to be paid. And then again, those terms are negotiable. Oftentimes, because it's owner financing and no fees involved, it would be a 9% loan. Interest only, which is the way I prefer to set them up, because that way none of the principal is being repaid each year, which means that keeps all of the capital gains taxes in deferred status, because you can receive interest income and keep the capital gains tax deferred. It's only
Yeah.
when you receive principal from that sale that you have to pay that pro rata share of your capital gains taxes.
Okay. So I'm going to nerd out here, guys. Let's interject on this. So just so you guys know the information you're getting here, I did not know. I hadn't been an investor for 12 or 13 years before this was even on my radar. So I have known about it for a little while. So if you're newer to the game, to get this is really valuable. Write this down, guys. So the IRS tax code section is 453. Okay. And it will break down. You can chat GPT it if you want, but it breaks down the way to delay taxes through this creative financing structure. So IRS tax code section 453. And you're only paying the capital gains if you collect principal. If you're just collecting an interest-only loan, like Todd just said, you're not paying that on the interest for the loan. You would only be paying it on the principal for that. So if you just had one property, this sounds like this is the way you would have done it, Todd. Just to kind of keep it a little bit more simple.
Absolutely. In fact, we did do that. I've done hundreds of owner finance deals to existing tenants or to somebody who came in from an ad who wanted an owner finance type deal. And sometimes we would sell the house on owner finance rather than rent it because our total income was higher than straight renting it. And just to add a comment to your IRC 453, the installment sale tax code for easier reading. If anybody wants to, geek out, as I call it, I'm a geek when it comes to this tax stuff. I spend hours and hours every week reading articles and reading information from tax attorneys or from the IRS itself on the tax codes and ways that it benefits us. But if you want more information about it, there's a publication called Publication 537 that is all about installment sales. It's like a 12-page publication that the IRS puts out. You can get it online at irs.gov for free and read it. It breaks it down to the simplest components of installment sales and how and why they work and what different situations are. And I have taken that publication and printed it out, and I have highlighted it and made notes in the margin. And I go back and reread that thing, on a
That's
regular
great.
basis because it's just a treasure trove of information. Anytime you can defer the taxes instead of paying the taxes, that means you have 100% of your money to reinvest in the next deal instead of potentially only 70%. On average, when you sell real estate, you're going to give up 30% of your gains to the IRS, to your state taxes, to the Obamacare tax, to your depreciation recapture on the property. Those things average out to about 30%, depending on what state you're in.
This is big money, especially if you take that other investment and compound what that 30% tax would have been over the course of 10, 20 years. I mean, we're talking about potentially millions of dollars here, guys. If you have enough assets that you could save money on. So, okay. I think we're good. I think we broke it down okay. And if we didn't, guys, just let us know. You reach out to us. We're trying. We just been doing this for a while.
I
But
get a
I mean,
lot of emails from people asking me specific questions about it, and I answer every one because I know this stuff like the back of my hand. And I think one of my strengths is that I can take something as complicated as an IRS code and read it and understand it between my conversations and my experience with other tax attorneys and CPAs and actually using these codes. I can break it down and kind of like give the Cliff Notes version and say, in layman's terms, this is what it means. And if you do this, you get this, and give it
That's
a
rough.
simple answer.
And the one thing I would tell you guys is it is important to know that tax code section too, because like when we've acquired properties this way, inevitably if we're educating the homeowner or we're educating the investor on this installment sale and what the benefits are, they'll bring in their CPA. And believe it or not, many CPAs have not ever heard of this before. So when and they the what's interesting is we know we have a done deal whenever they say, hey, I want my CPA to look at this. Because when we have the CPA look at this, we provide the tax code for them. And then when they start to crunch the numbers, inevitably they say you need to do the deal because it's that big of a tax savings. It's the numbers are that good to be able to do it this way. So anyway, just food for thought there. But okay. So now let's add in the trust element to it. So in essence, your buyer became the trust, right? So instead of Jim Manning, I was the one buying that individual property. Todd opens up a trust. What's your wife's name, Todd?
Lisa.
Todd and Lisa Trust, Van Meter Trust, whatever you guys called it. You opened it up, the Todd and Lisa Trust. And now that ended up, the installment loan happened to the trust that you own, correct?
That's right.
Okay. And then walk me through what else happened. Yeah.
Okay. First of all, we create the trust, and there's four or five steps you have to do to create the trust, and they're not hard steps. They're just, if you have the right paperwork, it's fairly straightforward. To get the trust set up. One of those things is you need an EIN number from the IRS because it's an irrevocable trust, so it is its own entity and it needs its own tax ID number because it will have to file its own tax return. But as Jim mentioned, sometimes you're talking about hundreds of thousands to possibly millions of dollars in taxes, depending on how many assets you're selling. And if you've got that much tax to protect or tax to keep in-house so that you can reinvest it and generate even more revenue, these setup fees and setup costs are tiny. They're a fraction of what the kind of money you can make after reinvesting the money. So once the trust is set up, the trust also needs to go open its own bank account since it's its own entity. And then the trust now has the properties since you've sold them to them, or if you've sold one at a time, that's fine too. And then the trust can sell the properties to a buyer. And then when the trust sells the property to the buyer, the trust is the one at the closing. You might attend also, but the trust and the trustee who you appointed will be at the closing. And the check from the closing proceeds will go to the trust because they're the one on title that owns the property since you sold it to them. And then all the proceeds go into the trust bank account. And then once it's in the trust bank account, then the trust has money in the account. If it sold that $200,000 house and it had a $150,000 profit, and maybe if we had it for 30 years, the mortgage was paid off, so maybe the full $200,000 went into the bank account. Now the trust has that $200,000 that it can invest, and that trust may go to somebody like Jim and his company and say, "Hey, we're interested in investing in your real estate fund, or we're interested in investing in your debt fund and having a guaranteed return come back to us." So those are just two ways that the trust can invest. The nice thing about doing an installment sale to a trust and then the money being in the trust is the trust has no restrictions on what it can invest in. It does not have to invest in real estate. It certainly can. A lot of people I know who have done this strategy use part or all of the money to start loaning money, and they become lenders, or they set up a joint venture and fund the company with the money from the proceeds. So, they may have a joint venture where they're becoming a hard money lender, and they're, getting those 15% rates of return and 5% fees for loan fees for setting up the account and stuff like that. That's a great return to have come in when you're from a business that you're not having to actively manage anymore. You're just a passive investor and letting those flippers go out there and actually run the businesses. You're just loaning the money to them.
No, that is great. So, all right, this is a little bit of an out of left field, kind of like a selfish question, maybe that I'm interested in for myself, and hopefully somebody else finds this interesting too. Did you stack on? Do you do anything with donor advised funds? And do you
We do not.
okay.
There are a lot of other strategies where you can defer taxes, charitable remainder trusts, charitable annuity trusts, and stuff like that. There's probably literally dozens of different strategies. Most of those strategies have a lot of built-in restrictions in them. For example, charitable remainder trust, typically that payment stream can only continue for 20 years or for your life. Whereas a regular trust, like we're talking about setting up an installment sale trust, that trust can actually survive for 360 years in most states. So it could benefit not just you, but your kids, your grandkids, your great grandkids, if that's the way you want to set it up. Or it could also benefit your charities that you back, or political candidates, or whatever it is you want the money to go to. There's no limit on how long it can exist. And most of those other funds have a lot of limits on them. And being an independent business owner for the last 40 years, I'm not a big fan of a lot of limits.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been great, Todd. Yeah, all the other questions I would ask you, I think we would need another hour for. So we better wrap this thing up.
Part two.
And oh, we should do a part two.
We could
So
do a series.
yeah, that's right. Well, hey, Todd, thanks for coming on. How do people get a hold of you if they have any further questions on this installment sale trust strategy? Or I don't know if you have a different name
You
for
can
it, but
email me any questions about real estate in general, or in using an installment sale or deferring taxes, rents, any of that stuff. Like I said, 40 years experience in real estate. I've seen and done a lot, not everything, but I've seen and done a lot. My email is Todd, T-O-D-D, at bluehatwealth.com. Blue hat, just like I'm wearing a blue hat, bluehatwealth.com.
I love it. Well, thanks for coming on, Todd. And guys, thanks for tuning in. And we will see you next time here on the Passive Wealth Show. Have a great day. All right, guys, that's a wrap. Thanks so much for tuning in. We have a website, passivewealthshow.com, where you can get more great content and resources. We offer a passive profit strategy session, and you can find that on our website as well, where we'll basically ask you a bunch of discovery questions and help you figure out if investing passively is a good thing for you or not. So go to our website, passivewealthshow.com, and we'll go from there.